Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Blogger News on the Radio. My name is Simon Barrett, and I will be your host today. This is our first program in what I hope will become a regular feature. In fact, it's so new, we haven't really even settled on a title. I rather like Stupidity in Review. This is a series that I've actually wanted to do for quite a long time. Virtually every day, I read some strange story, you know, the odd things that people do, and people do the most idiotic things. Now, it turns out that I'm not alone in this love of the whacked out world. So it is my great pleasure to welcome Manny Barling to the program. Manny, it is great to have you on the air.
Oh, it's wonderful. America is a bottomless pit for stupidity, and I can't wait.
I've heard that it's been a little damp in Southern California. Are you being rained on?
Oh, yeah. We've had 3 inches of rain in the last 24 hours, which I'll get to in a little bit. And Ashley's on the line but hasn't said hello to you. So we need to say good morning to Ashley F. Brooks, or good afternoon, actually.
Good afternoon,
yeah,
Simon. How are you?
I'm doing very well indeed. I mean, you were obviously skulking in the background. I didn't realize you were on the line with us.
No, I wasn't. I was on cat duty. I forgot to put the cat in the back. Otherwise, he pushes all the buttons during the show and tries to converse with everyone. He thinks he's cool.
We have a cat who not only knows how to use the speakerphone in the intercom, but he likes to hit redial at 3 a.m. and call his friends and go meow, meow, meow. So I get these telephone calls going, I think your cat called me at 3 a.m.
Oh, from Germany, New York, internationally, anywhere in the world, our cat decides they want us to talk at 3 a.m. in the morning. So I have boxes over all my phones.
Actually, my recommendation is do not have 911 on speed dial.
Good point. But we're going to get to that very quickly.
Right. So, Manny, why don't you lead us off on this new quest?
Okay. First, I'd like to welcome our guest, Arlene Sedaris, a film producer. She and her husband, Andy, are best known for producing the series Bullets, Bombs, and Babes, which featured good-looking guys and Playboy bunnies. There are 12 of them. They're legendary. They're available on DVD. And in a few moments, we're going to have Arlene talk about her films and her husband, Andy Sedaris, who sadly passed away with throat cancer. Andy, besides being a fabulously entertaining human being, was a pioneer in sports television. He directed and covered hundreds of football and basketball games, Olympic events. I believe he won 7 Emmys. Arlene can correct me.
Oh, no. Well, you know, the family joke was the reason we went into the movie business was if he got another Emmy, the house would sink.
I can understand that. From
yeah,
a,
it was actually many more than 7.
Yeah.
And he was one of the pioneers of television, just, you know, and he was the first person to, and this is due to his, journalistic background, but he was the first person to take the camera off the field. So,
right, he's the one who invented that wonderful shot at cheerleaders, that close-up that
the honey shot.
Every day.
The honey shot. That he became very
shot,
popular.
Right.
And very unpopular by certain women's groups for
ratings. Is that right? I didn't know that.
Well, of course.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes, yes, yes. And I mean, he would say the most outrageous things always, but particularly he said of the Buffalo State cheerleaders, now we know how they got their name. So, Some, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah. Well, you know, Andy was never one not to say that. And, of course, his achievements also include an Emmy for the Munich Olympics, in which he directed the entire news events of that horrible day, and really was a pioneer in that. And he won a news Emmy, if I remember, as well as the sports Emmy. Is that correct?
No. It was sports. I mean, it always was sports. You know, and people would say, I was in the truck when he did, the first time that I was in the truck for an Olympic coverage that he did, and that was in Mexico City, and there were 92 frames, you know, monitors in the truck that he chose from, and I have to tell you, he never missed a shot. You know?
I know.
But you,
yeah, because people would say, he directs football games? What does he do? He gets on the field and tells them where to run? No. He anticipates. You know, he anticipates.
Great time.
And, you know, brings the audience into the game.
Well, you know, Arlene, our first news story today is one I selected that I knew Andy would love. It's about, and what we're doing are the wackiest, dumbest, funniest news stories of the week. And this time we're starting with a year in review. It's a story about a retired Huntington Park police chief who was wanted until he actually submitted yesterday for leaving sexually explicit photos in Anaheim Parks, which turned out to be within a mile of his house. He was nailing up photographs of his genitals on trees, and they got him because they found his fingerprints on it. And the news said that a few women recognized them. I didn't know that. They recognized or they recognized something else. But, you know, isn't this a great story? Wouldn't you like to turn that into a film? That's
yeah.
Just bullets, bombs, and babes. Put a gun on them, a couple lewd pictures, some Playboy.
Oh,
buttons,
no.
I've already got the tagline for it. You know, flashing more than his police badge.
Oh, yes.
You know, dude, it's funny. You were talking about rain. We had 3 inches of rain yesterday. And we've had, what, 3 or 4 days of just incredible rains in Los Angeles. And Ashley looked to me and said, you know, L.A.'s safe from flashers. They won't be out in today's rain.
Right. One redeeming quality.
You know, Arlene,
it is a redeeming quality, isn't it?
What I like best about the story is they went to arrest him, and they found that he was outside in the United States. He was somewhere in Kosovo and in Europe teaching policemen techniques. And I wonder if it was a technique of stapling your picture on a pole. What, or how to grope, become a security guard and grope during at the airport, you know?
It's hard to believe he's a police sergeant. I mean, it's really...
Police chief.
He's a police chief.
Police
it's hard
chief.
To believe.
Very.
So to add to the story, when I went to check on him on the internet and see what was going on, I got this cascade of policemen arrests for indecent exposure, Provo, South Carolina, North Carolina.
Oh.
And it seems to be a problem with policemen. I guess it's been going on for a century, or maybe longer for all I know. They rode up on a horse 100 years ago and dropped their drawers. I don't know.
My goodness.
But it's definitely a police problem.
That's terrible. I mean, what's the psychology of that? I don't understand.
Well, you
that.
Know, there's a thin line between policemen and criminals, and he crossed over that.
Well,
now,
I suspect it actually comes from England. You know, they just want to show everyone their bobbies.
And, you know, and I know where he learned it. I looked at his resume. He served as a sex crime detective for years in Huntington Park, so he had an opportunity to learn and perfect his talents.
Maybe he was undercover too long.
that is supremely dumb. I mean, that's terrible.
Oh, yeah.
And especially to leave your face. You're, like, leaving every – your. It's one thing if you, like, cut the head at the photo so everyone could – he could still show off and no one would know who he is. But to leave your whole body is really stupid. He might as well Xerox his ID and leave it right on
exactly.
the – with his phone number.
Exactly.
And I'm sure this doesn't surprise anybody, but he had done it more than once because women had told investigators they found lewd photographs all along the trail at different times. They didn't notify the police originally. They destroyed the first set of photos. So, I mean, this guy turned, I don't know if he went to a Photoshop or he did it at home, but he had to go to some effort to do this, and he did it much more than once.
Oh, my.
Yeah,
well, I wonder if he used Kinkies. Oh, no, Kinkies.
Kinkies.
I bet he really lit up Kinkos with those wonderful male nudes he was going to put him of a 56-year-old man. I mean, I maybe put him up to terrify animals to make it safe. I don't know. I mean, that would terrify most women I know.
That's right.
That is just too awful.
Yeah, so, Arlene, back to the film swell. Andy used to say to me that there are no guns, there's no bombs, there's no war, there's no murders in my movies. So,
The movies are, R-rated, and they do feature, beautiful women, beautiful men, beautiful explosions. And a lot of the women are Playboy centerfolds. So, our Hollywood friends kind of turn their noses up at things. But those women, first of all, they're beautiful. And
they are gorgeous.
Yeah, they're beautiful, beautiful women. And they're, physically they can, run and learn how to, look like they're using a weapon. And when we would take them out on press junkets, they were very comfortable with the press because they were accustomed to it from being the centerfolds. So that was a real plus. And then the men usually were, adept at some athletic feat or motorcycle riders or something like that. So there was, no graphic sex, no graphic violence, and no profanity. So
pretty much we're talking about an adult Charlie's Angels show.
Well, yeah, it's Charlie's Angels Take Their Shirts Off.
That's great. Maybe you should bring me the dozen of them tomorrow. I've been missing them.
Oh, okay.
But, one of the things, as I said, I only watched, I guess it was Malibu Express that I watched because I just really could not resist heckling an old friend and client of mine. Who starred in the film Darby Hinton. So if Darby's listening, I can pick on him some more.
Uh-huh.
And make a long story short, Malibu never looked more beautiful than it did in that film.
Oh, yeah. Andy had a good eye.
Yes,
sure.
He did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you were producing with him, weren't you, Arlene?
Oh, yes, I did.
Yeah.
Well, I said to Manny earlier, Malibu Express I did not produce, and if I may say so myself, you can see the difference.
Oh, I'm going to have to watch now, too.
Well, the ones later on, they were, the fantasy scenes were really sexy and pretty, and we had a number of them. In fact, well, we had gotten to our eighth film, and we were just fed up with SAG because they never help us. They would harass us over stuff. And so we were going to go non-union. And it was the last film that Donna Spear was going to be in, and she came in and sat down and said, I'm really concerned because this is the last film that I'm in, and I'm afraid you're going to do more nudity. I said, fear not, you're right. And we did.
And as I understand it, you're still selling these films on your website. Is that correct? You want to give
us
a
website? Oh, right. In fact, the films are distributed through Warner Brothers International for television, television and cable and pay-per-view and all that through Warner Brothers. And I'm not sure that right now. I think it'll be in March. It might be earlier, but I think it'll be in March. The Mill Creek distribution will be putting out a set of 12 of the films. So they're alive and kicking. And they play all over the world.
Yeah, that's good because Warner Brothers has changed. My friend Peter Gardner at one time was the vice president, handled that as well as overseas distribution. And since Peter left and the regime changed, things got much different at Warner Brothers over the years.
Yeah.
And back to SAG for a moment. We have a mutual friend, Melvin Simon, sadly, who passed away a year ago. Melvin produced 19 films, of which half or more I litigated. And And you know that we were still having SAG problems 10, 12, 13 years later? Every time Porky's showed, the director and all the actors called and wanted to know when they were going to get the residual checks. Did you ever have that experience?
Not that literally, but I had other things. There was one in particular, which was really the day that I said, you know what, no more of this. I wouldn't say I'm an animal lover, but I wouldn't hurt an animal for anything. And I have cats. I mean, I've always had a cat. And we were doing something where the cat was supposed to look like it had been killed, it had been poisoned. And so we had a vet on the scene, and he gave the cat a shot of something safe. An actor turned us in to SAG for possibly abusing an animal.
Right.
And this person just so happened to she wouldn't eat Domino's pizza because they were against abortion.
Wait a minute. She wouldn't eat Domino's pizza because she was against abortion.
Yeah, because they were right to life, and they were contributing to that cause.
Boy, I'll bet that saved a few lives.
By not eating the pizza. We hear that show on Saturday, so not eating that GMO really helped her, actually.
You know what Andy would say? Don't forget, an actor killed Lincoln.
I'm sure he did. And on that point, I want to bring another news story in that's equally fun to talk about. And if you haven't heard this story, this is great. A bungling pair of teen burglars were caught red-handed breaking into cars after one of the suspect's cell phones, accidentally called 911. I mean, you talk about bad luck and stupidity. And then, you know, it was just amazing what happened next. Ashley, do you remember what you said, or do you have that quote anywhere?
I want to actually read the whole quote.
Oh, go ahead.
Okay, because this
please.
One gets me. She goes, "Let me see," she says on the phone. "When I beep the horn, it means now the cops are on. 911's been called, the cops are on." Uh-huh. She doesn't know this. "When I beep the horn, it means the cops are on their way, and you hear me? You promise you hear me?" And then muffled voice comes across, "Oh, okay, you hear me. Look in here in the glove compartment. Hey, they got a GPS or something." "Oh, I didn't even think about that." That's their GPS. You know, you got to break the SIM cards. They take the SIM card out, and they can trace it. If there's nothing there, leave it. Trust me, God always works in mysterious ways. You be greedy, that's when you get caught up all right.
That's hysterical.
This has got to be the dumbest criminal in the world. And, of course, she was teaching a 13-year-old how to do this.
How to break into cars and steal.
Oh.
So then they, of course, we know where they were headed, crime school, juvie detention. I think one was 19, and, of course, the young trainee was 13. I guess she was too young to be a trainee at McDonald's, so her friend thought she'd train her instead.
Oh
this is another fine example of not having 911 on speed dial.
Right. I'm going to remember that next time I break into a car.
There lies the lesson, right?
Boy, I'm glad we had this conversation.
I would say that story is right up there with the would-be bank robber who wrote the demand note on the back of his personalized deposit slip.
Right,
that's a great one, too.
One.
I always think of Woody Allen in Take the Money and Run, where he hands him the note, and the guy says, "Gub." He says, no, "I have a gun." He says, "No, it says Gub." And they get into that argument over whether it's gun or Gub. And that's how stupid it is. It would have made a Woody Allen film in the 70s. And by the way, this happened in Miami, Florida. This isn't some rural town or somewhere else. This was downtown Miami, actually, in the Daytona section.
But God works in mysterious ways, all right?
I think we're going to submit this one to the Darwin Awards, the annual ones for people who do stupid things. Except they didn't kill themselves. That's the problem. You know, most of Darwin Awards are people who accidentally die as a result of it, which takes me to our next story, and that's about a disabled farmer shooting at a fox accidentally hits two intruders who were trespassing on his land. But what he didn't know is they were trespassing and cutting through to a factory a warehouse at the other end next to the next property. There was a secret cannabis factory. So here's a senior citizen
on his mobile scooter,
you know, riding around and he kills two people. And by the way, his name is Mr. Tibbs. So now we understand why his neighbors call him Mr. Tibbs.
Uh-huh. Oh, crime stopper in a chair.
Can you see?
But the worst part, I mean, he thought he shot the fox. So first of all, he probably couldn't see and he couldn't hear because the guys had to be screaming. He had no idea he shot someone. So it wasn't until the police showed up apparently the kids had to go to, or the men or whatever, had to go to the hospital. And when they were there, then the police showed up and arrested the farmer for shooting them.
Believe it or not, they let him out, but they took away his gun permit that he's had for 20 years. And of course, I'm sure the policeman with a very straight voice said, Mr. Tibbs is unfit to be entrusted with a firearm and may present a danger to public safety and peace. And I'm sure he said it with a straight face.
I don't scour the papers for, you know, these kinds of stories, but I'm going to start.
Thank you, Arlene. That'd be great. And any listener, please, Gower, bring him, you know, call in. These stories we're looking for them.
And to make it worse, they found a cache of ammunition, and then they complained he kept too much ammunition in his farmhouse, but they didn't say too much. Maybe he thought the Democrats were going to attack him. I don't know. But he definitely was very worried because he had to be a serious NRA member with that much ammunition.
Arlene, let me give you some advice. Do not scour the news for these kinds of stories. you will become as insane as the rest of us.
Okay.
I like your story this past week, though, Simon, about Fox News making you stupid.
Oh, it that was delightful. Some organization that... I'd never heard of, but they put on a poll, and essentially they asked people factual questions, and about current events and politics. And one of the questions was, you know, what is your favorite news organization, where do you get your news? And they correlated the data and they determined that people that watch Fox News are way stupider than the rest of the population.
What I enjoyed most is I sent it to one of my friends who's a little bit to the right, and he wrote me this email back, says, wow, a slam by Mark Howard, a far left guy, an NBC, a far left company. Who would have guessed that they would denigrate a news organization that's kicking their ass in the ratings? Mm-hmm. I'm like, excuse me? did you miss the point? Then he sent me an email saying, if you can't beat them, slander them. Because I enjoy and laugh at Fox News, but I don't take their version of the news too seriously. And Arlene, as you know, the Bond movie, Tomorrow Never Dies, the character tries to take over the world is based on Rupert Murdoch. So, and I'm sure that was no accident, because in Britain, where he owns Sky News and is the source of most of the news, I guess he's the original trash maker, right, Simon?
Oh, in fact, I've never heard it actually said, but Irving Wallace produced or wrote a book, and pretty much his novel mirrors Murdoch, you know, how to manufacture the news. It doesn't matter what's true and what isn't. We'll just go with whatever we want. You know?
The percentages on that article in which the facts were incorrect was, but like you said, the list was incredible. and then how Fox News, they say, is deliberately misinforming its viewers, but so is CNN, so is MSNBC, and they went out in the solicitation of asking viewers specific questions that know the facts, don't know the facts, and they were coming up with the wrong facts every single time.
Well, you know what gets me is I don't care what side you're going on, and I'm not really on either side. I don't like any of them. I think they do a terrible job in the news. But, you know, as I said to my friend, how can you consider NBC to the left because run by General Electric and run by Universal Studios? ABC is Disney. I can't think of a more conservative company. I was raised down the street from them. And I want to tell you, Disney's as conservative as it gets, and CBS is certainly not known as a left-wing company. So how did all these people become so far to the left when they're billion-dollar companies that are trying to control the world? Yeah, I don't know if any of you have any thoughts about that. You've been in the media forever. And by the way, Arlene, one of the things I missed in your background is you were a television producer in the beginning, right?
Oh, yeah. I produced Hardy Boys Nancy Drew at Universal Studios. But, that was a while back. But I had a partner, and she and I were about the first young female producers of primetime television. And so from the day, I feel like a dinosaur when I tell these stories, but when the first day that I drove up to the guard gate and wanted, you know, to get passed in, he said, oh, no, the secretaries park in lot E. And it went from there, you know, it went to when we called for a secretary, the woman in charge said, I don't understand, there are two girls in the office already and you're not even in production.
Now, that's what you get for not wearing a low-cut tube top. They would top, then they would have given you the actress parking. And don't minimize your experience. If I recall, you two directed somewhere between 40 and 50, or produced 40 to 50 episodes of The Hardy Boys and Nancy Drew. Is that correct?
There were 42 episodes.
Yeah.
So,
and you also, didn't you co-produce or work on The Missiles of October sometime in your career?
Oh, that I was assistant to the producer.
Some funny stories about how crazy that set was at one time.
Well, the director, I don't want to talk about it.
You know, Ashley feels that way about a number of directors.
Oh, my gosh. I just had a conversation like that yesterday. Somebody was asking about this film that won awards. They said, thank God it's in another country. And they had to dub it because it was just a god-awful script and a terrible print.
And I don't want to raise any racial issues, but Ashley did a film once in blueface, too, which she was glad that...
I was glad that one never escaped. So I think we all have our little corners, but it was acting. I worked.
No, Arlene, I want to switch it over to something slightly more serious, but the comedy side of it. An old friend of yours, Dandy Don Meredith, passed away.
Yeah.
An extraordinarily decent, warm, and very bright human being who I only met a few times later in his career at Beverly Hills events. And I know you attended his funeral, knew him very, very well, and take a moment and tell everybody what a really wonderful person Don was.
He was, and he had the most humble opinion of himself and life and what he was doing. And he and Andy were good friends, and they went back to SMU. He was younger than Andy, but they used to talk about, you know, Don always introduced himself as Jeff and Hazel's little boy from Mount Vernon, Texas. And Andy was the son of a widowed Greek immigrant from Shreveport, Louisiana, and they wound up in SMU, and they would just, you know, kind of marvel at the fact that they were there with all the rich kids of oil company.
Well,
people.
I bet they said
and,
religion.
Which is when Don would always tell the story about when he was invited to his first white tie event, and so he went out and bought a white tie.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because, you know, I kidded Andy that I thought he was just too wild for SMU, which is a very conservative school. And Dandy Don, Don was a great quarterback there, but he didn't fit in either. He had more than his share of problems at SMU when he was in college. He was sort of the forefront of the fun.
Well, he did like to have a good time. You know, one of the things that Frank Gifford said was, you know, when they started doing Monday Night Football, they didn't so much worry about Don and if he knew the plays. They just were concerned that he knew the town.
They were concerned that Howard would stop at a liquor store on the way to the game.
Oh, well, that was another story.
Now, one of the sad parts to me is that frequently in the media, familiarity breeds contempt. And the longer they were on, I thought the personalities got difficult. And there was a time when both Don and Howard Cosell had difficulty being in the same room and are on the same set. And it appeared to be that way the last year or two. And that was sad.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, when Don firmly decided that he was going to leave, you know, people said, "Well, how come?" And he said, "You know what? I'm going to look back at this, and I'm as if it was the only thing, and it's not enough." So he went on to, you know, he did a lot of things. Do you know he and Susan started a foundation of where they've sent about 30 or 40 kids to college, among others, of his charitable efforts. So he was, you know, he's a pretty serious, really kind, spiritual, thoughtful person.
Yeah, I agree. So do you have any funny stories about them you'd like to tell us?
Well, about them, the two of them together, I can't think. But, you know, Don, there's a museum in Mount Vernon, Texas. And when we went to take the tour, the mayor met us and told us all about the museum and that the fact that they're probably going to expand it. And I think they're going to have a Don Meredith Day.
Oh, nice. That's
yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
Wow.
It is. Yeah. But he was a really good guy.
I don't know
if I can tell any stories that are repeatable.
Well, we'll move over to an area in a couple minutes where you can repeat some stories about Andy, who was always a joy. But, you know, this brings up an interesting point about, because I know that both of them enjoyed Vegas, and certainly Andy did. And I don't know if you saw the story about the Las Vegas robber who stole the casino chips from the Bellagio.
Yes.
And
that
set off with a on a motorcycle. Do you see that?
Uh-huh.
Isn't that a great story?
$1.5 million. I bet you he thought he was one lucky son of a gun.
Yeah, and he can't spend any.
Yeah,
that's right.
It turns out the chips are coded, and when he goes
uh-huh.
to cash them, they're going to trace them just like they do a GPS finding.
Sure, I'm surprised they weren't able to get him just by the fact that he was on a motorcycle and it was, you know, probably identifiable, but. I haven't heard anything since.
You know, believe it or not, as someone commented, people in motorcycle garb are common in casinos, and motorcycles are really very popular these days in Vegas. So if you take your plate off and you don't have plates and a custom paint job, I don't think it's so easy to find. But the real issue here is the chips are worth about 70 cents to a dollar each. So instead of getting $1.5 million, you probably got about $50 in plastic.
And Rick's going to jail for how many years do you think he'd go to jail? But I have this image of a movie where somebody goes back, they get on their motorcycle, they get back to the hotel room, and they do the thing of throwing all these wonderful chips up in the air because they know they're really wealthy now because they have $1.5 million, only to turn on the TV, and there you go. You can't spend a dime of it, you know?
So Simon, if someone calls you up with a hot deal on some chips so you can go to Vegas, be a little suspicious.
I wonder if any pawnbroker's guy conned into that one.
Oh.
Well, I want to know if they're available on eBay.
They could be. He might make his fortune on eBay selling them. You're right.
You know, I saw a story about someone who had something stolen from their house not too long ago, and the police just didn't do anything about it, so she got so upset. She went on eBay and started searching for it, and sure enough, she found somebody selling her stolen, I don't remember what it was, some stolen thing from her house on eBay and called the police.
Oh,
can you imagine
good.
That?
Yes. I wish I'd thought of that a few years ago. I had what turned out to be a very valuable planter in the front of my house, which I had it for so long, I didn't realize that it had, you know, kind of become an iconic item, and it was stolen. And then I saw it one like it that was advertised for an auction at like $5,000. So I don't know if that was mine. And how could you prove it anyway? So
yeah. You know what? I would have been sitting there with a photograph in hand saying, you know.
Well, you can do what they do. In Vegas, they've laid off half their security people, and they have 2,000 cameras on the floor now. Of course, one guy said cameras don't have minds. They don't think very much. So, you know, sometimes putting a camera out there, we have cameras around our place. Instead, if someone said to me, do you want these little ones? Nobody will see them. I said, no, make them as big as you can. And then we bought signs, big signs like you see around, and we put them right next to the camera saying, you are being videotaped. But I'm afraid after reading some of these stories, there are criminals who either can't read or wouldn't notice it or goes, oh, they'll never recognize me, because they will probably commit crimes anyway.
You know what they do? I mean, they say that the most house invasion crimes are, you know, people who leave a window open or a door open. When it's easy, that's when their homes are invaded.
Oh, yeah. Mostly. Simon, you were about to say something.
Oh, I mean, you know, people go with disguises, like putting their T-shirt on backwards.
There you go.
My favorite is still the dead presidents. I mean, there was a movie, a funny movie made, actually a heist movie made in the 90s with Keanu Reeves and a few other people where they robbed banks with the Nixon mask, Reagan, et cetera. I think they were all Republicans. That was a strange part of it. But I just, every time they robbed a bank, I couldn't stop laughing. I couldn't take it seriously.
I never saw that movie, The Dead Presidents.
I think it's called Point Break.
Point Break. There was one called Dead Presidents.
Right. Well, Dead Presidents is a movie about Vietnam vets coming back who can't find jobs and ultimately rob, Brinks trucks because they can't find work. And it's a very thoughtful and, frankly, at times very depressing film. But it's an excellent film. Which gets us back to something more uplifting, and that's stealing all these chips. By the way, they suspect the same guy robbed $20,000 in chips from the Suncoast Casino about a couple weeks before. And I guess they tie the crimes together because how many stupid people could do the same stupid act twice in the space of a couple weeks?
I think you're right, Simon. I think he had his T-shirt on backwards.
I was living in San Diego, and I bumped into a friend of mine, and he didn't look very happy. And I said, what's the problem? He said, oh, you're not going to believe this story. It turns out that he'd received a call from the FBI that there was a bank robber in town, and He was an older gentleman with a cane, but would, you know, walk into banks and demand money, you know, claiming that he had a gun. It was his father-in-law.
That happened to a friend of mine when it turned out they finally ID'd a serial bank robbery. A robber in Los Angeles, Orange County, it turned out to be his brother who he hadn't spoken to in 15 years because they had a fight. That was definitely fun for him.
This guy's M.O. Was that he didn't have a getaway car. You know, he just hobbled along with his cane.
So what, did he use a moped? Or
what did he do?
No, he just hobbled off. Yeah, and he finally got busted after the fourth time of hitting the same branch.
Hitting it literally with his cane?
Well, he probably had to be in walking distance of his home, right?
Oh, he was. he lived something like 3 or 4 blocks away.
How convenient.
You know, Los Angeles, or I should say Southern California, is a bank robbery capital of the world because we have so many freeways. So
guys
can rob a bank, drive 8 or 9 blocks, get on the freeway, and it's almost impossible to catch them until they get up 10, 15 of them. Well, we have a good friend whose name I'll leave nameless, who for years was chaired the FBI's bank robbery unit. So he would respond with people the minute the robbery started, and they would check, they would set people at freeway off ramps, everything, trying to catch these people getting away. And it would take some time to catch them. It's not easy in Los Angeles.
Right. Well, you know what? I'm afraid to say it's going to get easier with all the traffic.
That's true.
This is definitely true.
Yeah.
It is not hard. It is very, very hard to drive anywhere these days. And I don't know if you saw the morning news with 3 inches of rain.
Oh.
This city is not equipped to handle it.
No.
Arlene and I luckily live on hills, but we're on the flip side, so everybody below us gets all the water, and we're both very thankful. Right, Arlene?
Right. Oh, absolutely. But it's been, you know, this morning I woke up, I looked down, and I thought, how much do I want that newspaper? I want to get out there.
I think the key is to complain that the newspaper is wet and then they have to knock on your door.
Oh, but then they pack them, you know.
Yeah,
that's true.
You know, Arlene, what they don't tell you when you live closer to the top of a hill is we get all the rain. As the clouds hit the hill and start to rise over your area, you get twice as much rain as the area below you.
Is that true? No.
Yeah, it's true. The clouds have to lighten themselves to get over the air uplift going over hills. And that's why whether it's Big Bear, the Angeles National Forest, all these hilly areas around Los Angeles have these huge rain downpours is because the mountains attract more water than the flatlands.
Did you get off that off of Fox News?
No.
I mean, is that why I need a new roof?
Okay, sorry, what?
Is that why I need a new roof?
Maybe, Arlene.
Yeah.
No, Arlene, you need to consult a Cracker Jack box, too, because that's where I can't watch Fox News, so I get mine from a Cracker Jack box. So, you know, change the subject a moment. We have some news briefs so that we just can't pass up. These are little short stories about things in the past that just warm your heart. And the first one is Imelda Marcos got her Leyte mansion back. Isn't that
the
Supreme Court in Manila? I know everybody's dying to hear it. She finally has a place for her shoes, but I think the government still has impounded over 1,200 of her shoes, and I'm not sure whether they want to keep them or they feel they're going to sell them and make some money. But so they've had her shoes, what, 20 years now?
Oh, but
they're
back.
Coming back.
Right, that's a fashion statement. And you know, with my favorite thing with her, and I've always really appreciated her, because anytime I have over, I don't know, 20 pairs of shoes or whatever, Manny would go into the closet and say, "Don't you have shoes?" And I'd say, "No, I don't. I'm short a lot." And I would quote Imelda.
I want to know one thing. What size does she wear?
Yeah, maybe if this, maybe they have some for time and
you're
arrive.
Right. No,
yeah.
You're right. Because, right, 1,220 pairs can go into a tiny room and she's got tiny feet.
And I don't, so.
On behalf of all the men listening, I'd like to know how many 5-inch F me red heels she has.
What I think she should do, and, you know, clearly, much of her wealth has been squandered. She needs to get those shoes back, and eBay awaits.
That's actually very. I like that thought.
Well, listen,
I responded when you said most of her fortune has been squandered. Yeah, me too.
You know, wait a minute, though. She's got a – let's get back on that one. She was given a 17-room mansion on the island of Leyte, and it has a golf course, swimming pool, cottages, pavilions. Mm-hmm. She can entertain guests. Oh, my gosh. I mean, this is not exactly poverty-stricken. Plus, she has those 1,220 pair. It's the only time in my life I'm really jealous. 1,220 pairs of shoes. Wow, that would be great.
I'm not jealous until I find out what kind of staff she has.
And, you know, Simon, I look at the lawyer's side. And this sounds like I'm talking about a member of the Congress in the United States. Despite 900 civil and criminal cases ranging from tax evasion to embezzlement and corruption, they never pinned one on her. And guess what? She's regained a lot of political clout. She won a seat in the House of Representatives in the Philippine elections. Her son's a senator, and her daughter's a provincial governor. I mean, it sounds like so many people in our Congress these days, doesn't it?
Right. I guess it just comes down to name recognition. You know, seriously.
It's like that guy. The
you're right.
It's like that guy from Youngstown with the wicks.
Oh, yes, my favorite. His name's Trifant.
Because I have a friend who grew up in Youngstown.
So do I.
Oh,
my
really?
Wife. Ashley.
Oh, you.
And, you know,
what's with Youngstown? What?
You know,
it's a great place.
How come every time I get on the phone, I hear Youngstown, Ohio?
No, Ashley, you grew up in Youngstown?
I grew up in Youngstown, and I went to Chicago. Then I went to Chicago.
She escaped.
Friend also.
I did all my theater training in Chicago while working nights in the emergency room.
Oh,
so I did say Steppenwolf Theater and that whole thing.
Oh, wow, great.
Thing.
Yeah. But, Youngstown was also, that's what my friend also says. It was a great place to go. That's what I say about Brooklyn. It's a great place to grow up and get out of.
You know, one of my favorite stories about Youngstown, it only took me 7.5 years to meet Ashley's parents. I didn't realize so much that she was protecting me. So
I was protecting him completely.
She didn't want me to know the truth, actually. And so I finally go to Youngstown, and we stay downtown, which is a joke. And so I called my father-in-law, and I said, we'll be out there in about 50 minutes. He says, where are you? And I told him where we're staying. He says, oh, God, I'll come and get you. You know, and now he's in his 70s, right? And I said to him, that's what I can drive. He says, no, I'm going to come here. It's such a long drive. So I finally cut him off, said, I'm driving. Don't worry about it. So I go get on the freeway. It takes 10 minutes around the freeway loop.
To get to my house.
And he was shocked that I was willing to drive that huge distance.
He thought he must have been speeding.
Which is probably true, but, you know, so we're there, and I forgot the name of the house, honey. At one time it was equivalent to the mansion in Youngstown. They turned it into a hotel and eventually ended up being owned by Youngstown State, which is across the street. So we didn't know we were the last guests to stay there. So Asha goes down and wants to grab a brandy from the bartender who pours her a water glass full.
I mean, huge. I mean, I couldn't drink this thing if it took me a year.
So we get up, and the guy says, you check in? I said, yeah, we'll be out in a little while. He says, good, because you're the last one. I go, what do you mean the last one? Well, the hotel's closing when you leave. It was unbelievable. We go down there.
Oh, it's really closing, not just
really
overnight.
It was
like
closing.
Forever?
Yeah.
Yes, forever.
So it turned out that the lawyer who was handling what went downstairs was a classmate of one of Ashley's older brothers. Ashley, like me, is the youngest in her family. So Ashley says, hi, you went to school, Glenn Smith, you went to school with my brother. And he goes, yeah. Ashley reverted to Ohio, went, yeah, back. And I'm standing there watching this Ohio cryptic conversation, yeah. I thought I was watching, you know, some type of movie from Mars.
Fargo. It was Fargo. It was my Fargo moment.
Yeah, I closed the building today.
He and I had a complete understanding of everything. We completely understood the entire conversation with Yas. And Manny was standing there going, you didn't say anything. Okay, I have to get the door. 1 second.
Yeah, go ahead, Eddie. You know, I can't believe it. I'm sure it's FedEx, and you can't turn down anything from FedEx at this time of year. It's Christmas.
Oh, right.
Oh, yeah.
They don't actually wait for me to answer the door when they come. So I left bottles of wine for them because I wanted to say thank you for the holiday season. But
I know they drop and run. I got to come back to Imelda Marcos for a second.
Okay.
She went out and inspected the house the last few days, and guess what she found? They had excavated all the way around the mansion. There were huge holes underneath and around the house, and it turned out that there were treasure hunters who thought that her former husband had buried some of his money there.
Ah.
So, I mean, we're talking about 10-foot holes, at angled holes, 30 feet and an angle under this mansion. So it kind of looked like Treasure Island when she got there.
Yeah. I wonder if they found anything.
Well, I wondered the same thing. Nobody knew. And can you imagine nobody noticed? Because some of those holes, if you're digging an angle hole 20 feet down under your home looking for treasure, you're not using shovels. So somebody had to show up with fairly sophisticated construction equipment, and nobody noticed.
You mean like a pickaxe?
No. I think they're more sophisticated than that in the Philippines. So, you know, there's a whole bunch of other ones, too. One of my favorite on the news briefs coming up is one near and dear to our heart, and that's another Mel Gibson story, which Los Angeles is full of Mel Gibson running loose. I mean, you only hear the big slurs on national TV. And this one I hadn't seen before. They were interviewing Winona Ryder, and the subject had come up because, as you know, he criticized her recently. And she told a story about how she attended an event with a gay friend, and it just offended Mel Gibson, and he turned to her and he said, told this horrible gay joke.
In a drunken slur.
Made a few other remarks, then he said something to her about, yeah, you're an oven dodger. And Ryder didn't understand it. Someone explained to her that.
I didn't know what this was either, though. I really didn't. I would have been, what are you talking about? I like the Dodgers. They're a great team. Or maybe, but I prefer the Angels. That would have been my conversation.
And Arlene, I'm not sure you've ever heard that. It's an anti-Semitic remark referring to Jews who escaped the ovens in Nazi Germany.
What's the term?
Oven dodger.
Oven dodger.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
It is. I haven't heard that expression since my childhood.
I never heard that expression.
I went to private Catholic schools, and I heard a lot of anti-Semitic comments when I was young in the 50s, and that was one that some sarcastic anti-Semites used to describe the Jews who escaped the Holocaust, oven dodgers. I thought it was Gibson.
But here's
Mel Gibson, 50 years later, using an out-of-date anti-Semitic homophobic.
Oh, my God, it's been cruel.
I mean, Mel is so good at it, though.
Yes.
Some publicity is good publicity, or what's the saying, Manny? I think he's crossed to a new level, though. I think that he'd be better off with no publicity.
Well, you know, it's funny because we're not far from Malibu, and I have so many friends who live in Malibu. I lived there for a number of years in the 70s, and I have friends of mine say to me, they drive down the street, they see Mel Gibson in his car, and they go, oh, God, here comes Mel Gibson. I wonder if he's drunk. And a friend of mine said, his wife said to him, yeah, you think he'll insult me along the way? And that's how everybody's dealing with him right now.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. No, I mean, he's really over the edge. He's just sick. And happens to come from a particular background that's, you know, anti-Semitic and I don't know what else. So.
Well, I think he's basically anti-everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's can you imagine somebody who has had the career and the life that he's had, you know, married with a bunch of kids and incredible success as a movie star, a producer, and to be that angry? Oh, boy.
Yeah, where did that anger come from?
Alcohol.
Yeah, but why would somebody be, you know, just so vulnerable to alcoholism when you're so gifted, you know? It should be...
Well, let me offer you one of my news briefs that I was going to come up with addresses that topic. In New Zealand, they're talking about changing the alcohol laws because they took away all the taxes off alcohol, and guess what? It sells cheaper than food. So in New Zealand, and I believe in Australia too, people given the choice between their food and alcohol at the same price will take alcohol every time. And that's a customer. People consume large amounts of alcohol in those countries. And he grew up in an atmosphere where alcohol was a normal thing. So he's been drinking since he was relatively young. And oddly enough, for those who don't know, he's not Australian. He was born in New York City.
Right.
He lived there until his parents moved to Australia.
Right. And so he, I guess he lived there until he was an adult, because the first few successful films that he made were Australian films. Isn't that
right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
He didn't move after the Mad Max years.
Yeah. And he was, I believe, he was already married and probably had a couple of kids by then as well.
Yeah, I think he has six or seven, maybe eight children.
Yeah, just
his wife.
Ton of kids.
And
oh,
as
plus,
you know,
plus
he
the
had
one with
a
new world.
Right. The new one is the hottest divorce in L.A., even more than the owners of the Los Angeles Dodgers. He married a Russian lady, had a child with him, and she accuses him of beating her and doing this or that. And it's gotten so crazy that, she's had to hire bodyguards. And a funny story, this guy knocked on the door and said, Jack Nicholson sent me. I'm here to be your bodyguard, and I'll protect you. She says, oh, gee, that sounds wonderful. So after, you know, several months of being a bodyguard, her lawyer kind of got suspicious because he was acting strange, and he called up Jack Nicholson, and which is not that hard to do if you're in this business here in Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
And Jack said to him, I never heard of the guy. Well, it turned out he was an ex-con who took the job so he could steal her emails and all the other stuff, and he was out selling them, all of her confidential stuff, to some of the basic, you know, legal webcasts. I don't want to name any particular one, but
right.
That's what happens in this craziness. So he was releasing all these texts that Mel Gibson was sending to her. None of them were particularly attractive.
Mm-hmm.
So,
but she became a victim of this guy as well. God, you have to be so careful. You know, if you recall, there was a murder on Carla Ridge in Beverly Hills. It just so happens it was like right across the street from me. And a few days after they caught the guy and everything, there was a knock on the door, and he said it was a policeman, and he wanted to know if I had a video camera because maybe, you know, there was video evidence.
Right.
And a friend of mine was here and said, do not answer. You don't know who that person is. You know, call the city and make sure that that's who it is. It could be somebody canvassing to see if you have a video or if you're vulnerable to a robbery.
I would never have thought of that.
Yeah, and I wouldn't either. But, you know, people are, everybody's mean and greedy and,
If you look back to the Depression and through that period, we created more criminals from Bonnie and Clyde to Dillinger and all the rest during those times because people at the lower end of the educational scales, people who are frustrated because can't work for a few years,
right.
are left no alternative except that sort of side business of crime.
Right.
But it doesn't even take crime. You talk about someone being killed across the street for you. Our next story was a man who was killed by the Long Beach police was holding a water nozzle, not a gun, according to what the police said. And, you know, at first it seemed terrible because the police said, oh, he was pointing this water nozzle that looked like a six-shooter, and they described it as a pistol-grip water nozzle. Oh, come on. I've spent a lifetime at Home Depot. I haven't seen a 9mm water nozzle or one with a cold hand grip on it. Those little squeeze nozzles, you've seen them all. And so they shoot the guy, and they said, well, he was shot, you know, blah, blah, blah. Well, it turns out they claimed he was shot once with a shotgun and then a handgun. So now a few weeks later, it turns out after a little investigation by the family's lawyer and a little autopsy that it turned out the guy was shot, I believe, at least 12 times. He had 21 holes, 10 to 12 were bullet impact holes, and the other were exit wounds. So, and then it turns out the guy stopped at his friend's because he was too drunk to drive and just was sitting on the porch, and they think he didn't even see the police. So one of the guys, I think it was one of the lawyers, described it as the area looks like a shooting range, and they believe the police were within 10 or 12 feet of him when they shot him. So I guess you can't sit on your porch and water your lawn with something that looks like a handheld gun, or they'll shoot you.
The only thing that I can say in the police's defense is maybe he had one of those, you know, bottles of fertilizer under it. And, you know, they assumed that that was the, ammunition magazine.
Well, you know, Long Beach used to be a beautiful city that has turned into being sort of a crime haven. North Long Beach is particularly dangerous. Ash and I would visit a family friend from Youngstown of hers, and take her out to dinner, an elderly lady, and she used to be have to pick places to eat very carefully, and we looked over our shoulders walking in the car because at night, Long Beach morphs into somewhat of a dangerous zone. I don't know if you've ever, have you ever shot anything down there, Arlene?
No, no, I haven't.
Shot as in shot?
Yeah,
shot.
No, no, no. with 35 millimeter.
Are you down
there
shooting lately?
I realized just
We rarely filmed in Los Angeles because of how difficult it is, you know, with workers' comp and unions and all of that. You know, it just they make it tough. To shoot here.
You mean you didn't shoot all these movies in Hawaii because you wanted to lay on the beach and have fun?
Mm-hmm. We shot significant portions of the films in Hawaii, but we would double, you know, Shreveport, Louisiana, Arizona, Dallas. I mean, we'd go, we traveled, but not very rarely in Los Angeles. Las Vegas, we shot in Las Vegas. We shot in a couple of private homes in Los Angeles on the QT.
Yeah.
But,
what was it like shooting in Shreveport?
It was great. They and then this was before Katrina, because since Katrina they have become a motion picture mecca. There are
a number of films that are
shooting there, but we were there before anybody. And they opened up the city to us. They were fantastic. The woman who was the head of the motion picture commission was like having my own personal PA. She
That's
was
great.
Unbelievable. The permits to shoot at the airport were $1 a week.
Oh, I know.
And I wanted to pay, you know, somebody make a donation or something. No, what they asked was that I write a note to the mayor to say thank you.
You know, Arlene, earlier in the decade I represented PAX Television, which is no longer around.
Oh,
but,
right.
I worked on some deals where, you look at the tax breaks, the efforts, some things they were doing to attract film shooting in that time. It was really, you couldn't resist
they
it.
They still have those tax breaks. We didn't take very much advantage of that because we hired people from here and traveled, you know, most of our cast and crew, and traveled them. It was made much more sense than Louisiana people.
Oh, I agree. You know, and I have a wonderful film story about Louisiana. Our friend Sir Roger Moore, the former James Bond, was shooting Live and Let Die in there on the bayou. So those scenes with the crocodiles and all of that.
Uh-huh.
So Roger went to lunch with his PR agent, Jerry Pam, who I know you knew. Jerry and he hopped on a boat, and someone told him where this bayou was. So they go to this bayou, and they sit down, they start drinking beer, they start eating crawfish, everything. So they're back in the boat, and they don't have a clue where they were after a few too many drinks. And they're wandering around the coast trying to figure out where they're on location, where up comes a boat patrol says, y'all look like you've been drinking. And Roger looks at him and stands up as straight and tall as he does and goes, of course we are, but that's not the reason we can't find where we're going. He says, well, where are you going? He says, we're shooting the Bond film. And he goes, oh, he says, you're James Bond. Come on, follow me. I'll take you there. So Roger told me, much drunk and gone, he tried to follow this cop halfway around the lake and took him to the location where they showed up late.
But you know that his son Jeffrey was in one of our films.
Who was?
Jeffrey.
Jeffrey was? Really?
Uh-huh.
I didn't realize. I haven't seen Jeffrey in a year or two, but he's running a restaurant in London these days, a very successful one.
Uh-huh.
And the other son, Christian, who you may or may not know.
No, I don't know.
Christian moved back to Monaco and is in the real estate business in Monaco.
He acts and walks and looks exactly like his dad. He's so handsome.
Well, Jeffrey wore wore Roger's suit, the first tuxedo that he wore in a Bond film, and Roger wore it for our film.
Oh,
it was fit
cool.
to kill, if you.
How nice!
It was. He was a pretty bad boy. He was nice on film. At those ages, I mean, this is, 12 years ago or something. He was pretty young and
he settled down and got married, and he's relatively conservative right now. Roger celebrated his 80th birthday in Los Angeles, and Christian, Deborah, and Jeffrey came in for the event. It was actually a lot of fun. I wish I had enough time to tell you how that birthday party went. That was a beauty.
Now, did you say Jeffrey's married, or
yes, he's married, and I think he, no, he doesn't. I don't think he has a child, but he is married, and haven't spoken to him since a birthday party a couple of years ago. But you know, which takes us, we've got to add something cultural to the show.
Got to have culture.
You know, so we're going to talk about Chinese art and panda art.
Panda poo.
I don't even know how to discuss this, but can you believe a statue of a Venus de Milo sold for $50,000 in China? But it's how the statue is made that amazes me. And Ashley, you are our guru today. Tell us about this panda art.
Well, let's start off by saying this is an event that's to raise money for a nursing home.
Mm-hmm.
So someone creatively decided that they would go to the most sacred thing they have, which is the panda. And the panda puts out 45 pounds of poo a day. And they took children and they made statues out of panda poo.
The statues are
selling for $50,000 each.
And by the way, the kids who helped him, and he didn't even wear gloves. They said the poo taste smelled like tea, so it was okay. Because the pandas were vegetarian.
Oh, wow.
But other children had some common sense. They didn't want to get near the statues. But, I can you imagine? Look at my Mona Lisa here. I think their new one is something more ambitious. That's a life-size poo rendition of Michelangelo's David. So for those art collectors listening to me, this is coming to a neighborhood in you. In fact, you can
not in my house.
I can't imagine what it must be like, the aroma in the heat wave. They took this.
That's why I invented Febreze.
They mixed this in with plaster and glue.
Mm-hmm.
And the downside, I would have bought one for Manny for Christmas, except it only came in one color. So the fact it only has one color just wouldn't go with their house.
Yeah, right.
Can't you see it, Arlene? Someone comes over the house and goes, "That's beautiful. What is it?" And I go, "Oh, it's panda poo."
So, oh, my.
Simon, how many are you going to order?
I'm kind of holding off. I'm going to wait. I'm going to wait and see, you know, if the price drops.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? It's just unfortunate it's too late to order for Christmas.
I'm sure they'd airmail express that to you. But I don't know how you get into the country. I mean, if you can't just take fruit into the country because of the fruit flies, what do you think's going to come with panda poo? So, I mean, I guess I don't even know if you can import it into the country.
Well,
you know that's something that we should investigate. You know,
be my guest.
Let's look at this in a different direction. We always see these pandas, you know, face up with a big smile, but let's look at the other side of the coin. You're talking about an animal who defecates 40 times a day, producing 45 pounds of waste. Do you know how much that is for any animal?
You know, I can say this, though. If I start looking at the cat litter, because, you know, clumps, and I start seeing art in it, I mean, that's a Rorschach drawing. There's something wrong with me. So, I mean, it's... Who comes up with that?
Well, you know the people who see Mary in a peanut butter sandwich? Right? So, keep your eyes peeled.
Yeah, definitely, yeah.
I love some of the comments, though, on the Internet, because I'm going to read some of these comments. There's this doctor who wrote, and he said, now the S word, I'm going to just say S, because obviously I don't want to say the full swear word.
Right.
The Chinese have caught up to the West. Even their art is S.
Yeah.
Wrong. It's even their S is art. Contemporary art will always attract derogatory comments like S attracts flies. This is the most expensive S I've ever seen. So this goes on and on about the S word and the Chinese and how they come across with this whole thing. But it's gone into a major museum now. They have museums and people are putting their nose down into the art like they always do, and there's a lot of questions about this particular art.
Yeah.
But one of the favorite things I had also with the nursing home was that this little girl, as part of the fundraising, each little child had to write essays. So this little girl wrote at that one, said that her daddy was exactly like a panda. And every time he drinks, which is frequent, he becomes black and white. This has now gone on all over the nation. She has won, I forget how many yen. And I can't imagine this little girl trying to go home and explain to daddy. She was just not... I mean, it reminds me of when I was a kid. I was in first grade, and someone asked me to explain my mom. And I guess I was a little creative back then because I said my mother was an owl. She was up all night, and she slept all day. So my teacher immediately pulled me out of class and phoned my mother because she thought my mother was doing, you know, night walking.
Yeah.
So then I got scolded for the fact that my mom was nursing nights.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
I just want to point out that the competition that was held in China, it was asking people to write an S-A.
One could look. But while we're on the topic of S-A, Simon, you read our book, It's Not Your Fault, which was incidentally published yesterday, so any of our listeners who are interested in our books can go to Amazon, buy It's Not Your Fault. It's about weight gain, obesity, and food addiction. And in that book, we tell a story about cows. And what shocks me about the panda is one cow discharges equivalent of excrement of 14 people at a time. Yeah. Most people don't realize that. So you ask yourself, what do you do with it? Because now, besides the art, I have to ask myself, what does China do with all this leftover panda poo? Well, in the U.S., what they do is they create these lagoons. So next to all these factory farms around the United States, they have manure lagoons. They're vast open cesspools, and they're a huge problem. Some of them, and I believe in Indiana it happened early March this year, it got a giant bubble 20 feet high.
Huh.
And one of the neighbors complained that the farmer wanted to go out there in his rowboat and pop the bubble. And they were all scared it was going to blow up the neighborhood because it contained 21 million gallons of decomposing cow manure. So I wonder, does China have these manure lagoons carrying 21 million pounds of panda do? And if so, what are they going to do with it? It's amazing.
It's a horrifying idea. You know, this is going to be the next big import from China.
I guess we'll call it the poo conspiracy or something.
Or it'll be like King Tuck, you know. They'll just, instead of, you know, it'll be traveling like a circus across the United States.
And by the way,
I think maybe we should call it Poogate.
That's not a bad idea. Simon, did you read that part of the book? It turns out the one of the about a month after the article was written, he went back, he couldn't resist it, and he went out and he popped this 20-foot air bubble containing methane gas.
While smoking,
right?
He doesn't need we say more.
He had to be hospitalized for burns. Now, this guy qualifies with a 9/11 caller. Why don't you just carry a torch?
Right.
It reminds me of the guy in the old days in the 50s, which I saw a lot of his youth, the guy with his cigarette hanging out of his mouth with ashes hanging, pumping gasoline in his car.
Right.
Yeah, that used
doesn't
to be...
Doesn't everyone do that?
they did.
They don't do it twice.
The law. So I wonder now if we're going to spark a new trend. What I think may happen is people around the United States may start going, gee, let's salvage the cow poo and let's make cow poo garden statues in the new industry. They can sell them on the internet, you know? I mean, no problem.
Garden gnomes.
Yes, that's right, those gnomes.
Can you imagine picking up a local label saying, genuine cow poo?
I can't even believe we're having this conversation, all because somebody chose us to do art. And oh my gosh. It reminds me of the time I was in Chicago, and did you know Judy Chicago, the artist?
Oh, I know who she is. I actually have a piece of hers.
You do? Oh, really? Maybe I should tell the story then. I was young and stupid, and I didn't know who she was, and someone called me up and said, she was just being introduced, and they said, there is this incredible event, You can't get tickets for it. You have to show up in a formal, and you have to just look your absolute best. So the limo came over, picked me up. I was in, you know, spiky heels, and I'm driven down to this really not-so-nice area of Chicago. I can't remember what street it was on. And it's in this rented place that's upstairs, so I had to climb upstairs with these spiky heels on. And I get up there, and everybody's noses are down into the art. And it's the 12 disciples, and she's done all these hand-painted plates in women's private parts.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, the women are, you know, men are looking at these parts, and men are looking at these parts, and their noses into the plate saying, oh, my gosh, I think I like this one best. And I couldn't get into the 12 disciples being these women's private parts. I mean, it was just...
You know, and Arlene, as she's someone who loves China, she has Christmas China and all this.
Oh, yeah.
I'm so glad I don't have to scrape my gravy off and see a Judy Chicago image underneath. That's all I can say. So, all right, that's a subject we probably really need to move on. So let me give you another quick news brief, and this one's slightly more serious, even though most people won't see it. But can you believe Sara Lee is selling out to JBS Meats of Brazil, one of the big charter big food members, the top 10. So now we're going to have a pork producer in Brazil, factory farming pork, who make all these packaged lunch meats that you see in the store, mm-hmm. turning out Sara Lee. I mean, that spells absolute disaster. But that's not so much a topic for now. People who listen to our to Simon's Surviving the 21st Century at 11 o'clock, so it's 10 o'clock L.A. and 1 o'clock Eastern time on Saturday, we're going to go back into big food and talk about this subject, because the last thing I want to know is that someone who's doing factory farm pork is making those Sara Lee cakes. It makes you wonder what's going to be in them.
I don't know if you have to worry about that. But, you know, the other night, Charlie Rose, he interviewed, I don't know, the president of Brazil and talked about their economy and how they're growing, and it was pretty impressive.
Oh, I agree it is.
Yeah.
But Simon, you sounded offended by that. How do you feel about it?
Oh, I think they're going to be yummy. I'm going to...
I like pork lard in my cakes. I think it's actually excellent.
I'm going to put them with my huge collection of Twinkies.
Those never go out of style.
Simon, I believe
they don't have an expiration date.
Right.
Right.
How does everybody know that, but not me? I did not know that they did not have an expiration date, but I now know that because you're like the second person or third person who said that to me.
I think it speaks to your nutrition choices.
I never looked at a Twinkie package.
Well, you know, I can't look at a Twinkie without thinking of Dan White, who murdered the mayor of San Francisco, George Moscone. When they said, why did you do it? He said, I ate too many Twinkies and I didn't know what I was doing.
The Twinkie defense.
The Twinkie defense. And I have one more news brief before we get to our
Christmas
story.
Oh, because it's Christmas. This is Christmas.
No, before we get to Christmas stories, I got one more, and that's for comic book lovers. They'll be happy to know that Tokyo, in Japan and Tokyo, they have banned comic books that have images that are slightly disturbing, these new gothic comic books, which include some of the later Supermans and all the rest, because mm-hmm. they want to protect the youth from this. Mm-hmm. But when I read the article, I was shocked to find out they only banned them in Tokyo. So the whole rest of Japan, you can be totally corrupted as a teenager, but they're going to save the children of Tokyo.
But worse than that, hon, it's the fact that not only they have these violent, sexual, explicit books that they're exporting into America. Mm-hmm. So the only place that they're, like you're saying, they're protecting their own in that one little area.
Yeah. So
you got to start somewhere. But they really are a very strange when it comes to violence and letting their aggressions out. I mean, they have very strange, to us, very strange customs.
Well, sure, because, you know, those of us who spend any, I've been to Japan a couple of times and I've known many Japanese people, and there's a big conflict between the way the people from the samurai culture view violence and the way the average Japanese views violence. But what gets me about passing this law is why only in one area? It's funny, in the United States, it's America's heartland that protects their youth so much from these influences, especially movies and things, but you go into major cities and there's less concern about urban youth. And I wondered why they were less concerned about rural youth than they are urban youth. You have any thoughts about that, Simon?
Well, yes, I've got lots of thoughts.
Control yourself.
Arlene, I'm going to go back to you. The movies that you produced were definitely R-rated.
Mm-hmm.
Did you feel that that there were parts of the U.S. that didn't like the material?
Well, you know, okay, I've produced Hardy Boys, Nancy Drew. At Universal Studios for ABC Television, and it was 7 o'clock. That was adjacent to prime time, so it was really watched carefully by the censors. And every week, with every episode, there was somebody from either Universal or ABC that would say, "Can you make them a little sexier? How come they don't use guns?" And you know. The answer was no, because first of all, my partner and I had gotten the rights from the woman who was the daughter of Stratemeyer, Mrs. Adams, and we had, she said, "I don't want guns used," and we said, "Fine, that's the condition that we'll keep." And of course, she didn't want if we combined the two, she didn't want and the Hardy Boys kissing Nancy Drew. So, I mean, she had very strict, conditions. But they always wanted to make them sexier. Then I start doing these movies, and those very same people are like, "Oh, you do those movies." So there's a little, The only people that I really felt were kind of prejudiced against the movies or had preconditioned notions about what those sexy movies were really like were people in Hollywood. the snobs. But, the films, when they first came out, there were sections in Blockbuster, which was the family movie store, there were Andy Sedaris sections for the videos. So and they did not ever have Playboy videos. So
when I first moved here to Los Angeles from Chicago, I was with Playboy conventions in Chicago, strictly that section of Playboy. So that I would do the conventions and be a spokesperson. Always kept clothes on, etc. I came out here, and that's the first thing they said was, if you're even associated with Playboy, your career nobody even cared looking back on it, but I didn't connect with them because of that.
So let's end this show with a Christmas story, and this is one that's near and dear to Ashley's heart and hard to believe, and it's about a sex offender posing as a Salvation Army bell ringer in Vacaville, California, which is outside of Sacramento, and what we call the Central Valley, the San Joaquin Valley. So, Ashley, tell us about that story. I know you have a lot of interest in that one.
Oh, no, you tell the story. I think you tell it better.
Do I? Well, they had a sex offender who I guess it's Christmas, and I don't know if he was trolling or just looking for money, but he got a job there, put on the uniform, took the oath, and went out, and he took his own kettle and manufactured his own Salvation Army kettle, and he just started collecting money, a little for them, some for me. And I love the quote by the Salvation Army Captain Jonathan Harvey, quote, "Something just wasn't right. I didn't feel good about him." Well,
and they saw him leaning against a wall. So once they saw him leaning against the wall, they said, "Geez, I guess we should do a background check on this guy." And they found out that he had a conviction for rape and 2 counts of child molestation. So here's this guy collecting money, and when they discovered that he had was stealing money from Salvation Army, he escaped with his GPS anklet on and on his bicycle. Of course, they catch him 30 minutes later, but there's our Christmas story.
Yeah. Can you imagine? You hire a guy, he's wearing a police prison GPS anklet on, he's out on parole or whatever,
uh-huh.
and nobody notices it.
Oh, my God.
You know, so, and I love the policeman. The policeman said, oh, we just set up a trap to have him right into our hands. Well, and a GPS. And
he's on a bike. I mean,
yeah.
Here's a guy screaming to go back to prison.
Mm-hmm, right.
Was it a high-speed chase?
Well, if you saw the bicycles on Venice Beach and the rest of them, it could be. Although I've often wondered whether any of these police have had to chase some of those guys on those roller skates, or the bladers. I'm not sure they can catch them on a bike. So now if you want to give money to the Salvation Army, check the guy in uniform out a little bit.
Look at the kettle.
Right.
If it's a tin can, don't put the money in it.
Right.
If it says pork and beans on it, you know for sure it's not the right one.
Right.
Well, you know, I mean, this isn't Guys and Dolls. What kind of person do you expect to join the Salvation Army at Christmas to collect money? It's somebody who wants a share of that money. And it's amazing they don't have more thefts than all that.
That's true.
But
that's
can you imagine how dumb it is to create your own pot, paint it red with some paint you get at Home Depot and get out there and expect to escape on a bicycle with a GPS on?
With a GPS anklet. I mean, that takes it.
It does take the cake.
So he gets our award for Stupid Christmas Criminal of 2010. So
that's some way to end it. On that note.
I am sure that there's going to be others.
Well, there's only 3 more stupid days to Christmas, I think, or 4. So how many dumb... of course, you're right. America's a fertile ground for these stupid, dumb criminals, so they must be doing something somewhere. The question is whether the police can catch them. They seem better adapted for shooting people with garden hoses on their hand.
Well, one of the things that I definitely want to give out, Simon, I hope it's okay, is the fact that when people are making out Christmas cards, it's not too late to please add a soldier. And I'm going to give out a address that everyone please send in a card to a soldier at Recovering American Soldier, care of Walter Reed Army Medical Center, 6900 Georgia Avenue Northwest, Washington, D.C., 20307-5001. And then when you fill that out, when someone says there is no Santa Claus, laugh in their face, say that's ridiculous, and tell them Santa's alive and well, and we are on his team, and send out a card.
Okay. That's great. That's really great.
I don't know,
are you familiar with Operation Gratitude?
No, I don't know that.
Oh, because that's, you can look it up on the internet, and that's something that was started by a woman, and now it's huge. And it is sending packages to, to people in service and Christmas cards, and it's really...
I'm sorry, give us the name again.
It's Operation Gratitude.
Okay.
And you know, .org or even just Google it and you'll find it, and it's really terrific.
Simon, the clock's ticking on us. Simon, is there anything you want to say?
I really want to encourage everyone to pull out that Christmas card and mail it, because these people are supporting us. Many of them, didn't choose to become disabled. In fact, I doubt any of them chose that route. But they are supporting the United States. And at this time of year, in fact, at any time of year, we need to be behind them. Mm-hmm. Give them a little bit of hope. Mm-hmm. And it's amazing what a simple Christmas card might do. If you can send gifts, but at least a card.
Mm-hmm. So I want to share with you something that I was going through Randy's drawers and stuff, there was a he had cut out a little thing from the newspaper, and it was scotch taped to his drawer, so he saw it every day, and it's a thankful heart. And a thankful heart is not only the greatest virtue, but the parent of all other virtues. And if you're really thankful, what do? You share.
That's beautiful.
No, yeah.
On that note, we'd like to wish all of our listeners Merry Christmas and hope they join us again next Tuesday and make this a weekly thing. And
okay.
Arlene, I hope you come back and visit us sometime in January. And
thank you.
Look forward to seeing you again.
Thank you very much. I had a good time talking to you, and I look forward to seeing you soon.
Arlene, it
yes.
has been delightful, and I'm sure that you will be back, and maybe we can pry out some more strange stories out of you.
Well, I have some funny stuff from the films that, you know, because they were, you know, low budget, and I was producing them very careful with how the money was spent, and there are some funny events in the 12 movies.
I can't wait to hear them, Arlene.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
And the last thought for our listeners, if you have a story that's funnier, dumber, or even more stupid than what we've read, please send them in to Simon, or get ready to dial in and call us on next Tuesday's show and tell us the story. So you want to wrap it up, Simon?
Yep. My email address is zzsimonb@gmail.com, or just go to www.bloggernews.net, and you'll find a big black box. If you click on that, it will bring your email to me. Manny, Ashley, Arlene, this has been a great afternoon. I want to thank you all for taking part. And if we don't talk again before Christmas, have a great Christmas.
Thank you. The
great
same
to
you.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.